Thank you, Scott. Thank you, everyone. Our next presentation is very unique to this version of the Turfgrass Monograph. We've not had this next chapter in the previous two versions of the monograph. It is called Turfgrass Outreach Programming. Many of us, even if you don't have an extension appointment, get involved in outreach programming in some way, shape, or form. And this has big impacts because virtually everybody has a lawn. Everybody's got an opinion. And this is one way we really get out there in society. Authors on the chapter are Aaron Patton from Purdue, Lori Trenholm from University of Florida, and Clint Waltz from University. And Aaron Patton will be presenting. Thank you.
Well, first I want to say, as outgoing chair of the symposium committee, I propose we have a workshop on called Turfgrass Genetics and Genomics for Dummies next year, and I'll be the first to sign up for that. Well, I want to thank the editors of this monograph for thinking about extension when they put together the list of topics and for giving this opportunity. Obviously, we use these chapters as part of our career advancement packet and so on, but it's a tremendous learning opportunity as well. I know I learned a great deal about what others, what other scientists, other turfgrass extension specialists were doing as far as, you know, the programs they had, how they were reaching out to various clientele, from the professionals to the homeowners. And so that was great, great learning experience for me. I also want to thank, before I move on here, just thank my co-authors on this chapter, Lori and Clint. And so, you know, we had, I'm sure like all the authors of these chapters, had several brainstorming sessions trying to figure out exactly what we would do with this chapter. I'll talk a little bit more about that. So one of our goals for this monograph chapter was to provide a kind of an overview of turf extension, and we wanted to include with that kind of what the historical data on turfgrass extension, as well as what the current state of turfgrass extension was, and any thoughts on where that might move in the future. We did collect some data from C5 membership on that, and I'll talk about that. We took the task of trying to highlight certain programs across the country and how they fit into all the various, or the extremely wide-ranging type of programs we have in extension. And so I really won't talk about too many of those examples today, but they're in the chapter. And so hopefully when you read the chapter, you won't get offended if we left you off, because we just can't mention, there's so many good programs out there, we couldn't talk about them all, but we did try to make sure we covered all the different types of programs and some of those that have been very successful. There, we did have some challenge in the development of this chapter. As John said, this is new to the monograph, and so one of the challenges was, you know, where do you start? We've never had a chapter like this. We've never had information put together in a nice, convenient package before. So, you know, one of the first tasks that I did was try to figure out, well, maybe they've published some of this somewhere else. Maybe a crops group has, or a soils group have, you know, talked about, summarized their extension programming efforts, and I couldn't find that anywhere. I couldn't find that there was a professional group of scientists who'd ever summarized what their extension programs look like. And, it might have been out there, but I couldn't find it anywhere. So that was one of the big challenges in development. And the previous monograph had about a page or a page and a half, if my memory serves me correct, on turfgrass extension, and that was in the industry chapter. So that was our biggest challenge in development, was, you know, where do we start, what do we do, and so on. So we ended up having something that ended up being about 35 plus pages or so before references, and had about 70 or so references. I know I reviewed another chapter that was probably twice that long and had four times that many references, so I don't know if this is going to be like a two or three volume monograph, but I imagine it's going to be pretty large when it's all put together and be a great resource for us as time goes on. So here's what the outline of our chapter looks like. We have these various 10 or so headings. Introduction, I'll talk a little bit about that, a little bit about history of turfgrass extension, I'll visit on that today. program planning, and then from that we went into programs for professionals, programs for county extension agents, and programs for homeowners. We also discussed a little bit about diagnostic training and the various diagnostic labs and the role they play in turfgrass extension. We talked about opportunities and challenges in the turfgrass as they relate to turfgrass extension, and I'll try to visit on some of those. We talked a little bit about the scholarship of extension and how that's big for us, at least for the younger turfgrass extension specialists, as they try to document the impact of their program and demonstrate scholarship on what they do, just as we do with our research programs. And then we just had a few summary comments, kind of concluding comments. So first, I just want to probably go in a little bit more depth on a couple of these sections, and one of them is this introduction section where we talked about the history of extension, what is a turfgrass extension specialist, and a little bit on the survey that we did and what the data was. So hopefully what you'll learn from this presentation today is just maybe a little bit of a historical background on some of these things, and then learn a little bit more about our extension programs in C5. So those of you familiar with extension probably know a little bit about how extension started, and started in 1914 with this Smith-Lever Act. And in the act, the quote was, in starting extension, was to aid in diffusing information among the people of the United States, useful and practical information on subjects related to agriculture, and to encourage the application of the same. And the act goes on to say that extension work shall consist of the giving of instruction and practical demonstrations in agriculture and said subjects through field demonstration publications and otherwise. And so that's a lot of what we do. And early turfgrass extension was much more about demonstrating, you know, how mowers work and maybe a couple fertilizer programs and some real basic fundamentals, and that's obviously changed over the years. The Smith-Lever Act was amended in 1985 to state that the development of practical demonstrations or research knowledge, this is where the research component comes in, and the giving of instruction and practical demonstrations of existing or improved practices or technology. So the research and the technology piece was added into the amendment at that point. And I'll talk a little bit more about this later and how our programs really, I think, well represent the original intent of that act. So we wanted to try to come up with, you know, what is a turfgrass extension specialist? What are some characteristics that embody those that do turfgrass extension work? What makes a good turfgrass extension specialist? And so we came up with this kind of list, and some of those are underlined there. First thing is that turfgrass extension specialist is a knowledgeable person, someone that has a wide breadth of knowledge on things, is aware of what's going on in the industry, and can make quick adjustments in their programs and so on because of their knowledge of the industry, and then they can anticipate current and future needs as well. Our extension specialists are cooperators, often working with industry to develop programs. You know, that's typically in the form of conferences and writing of publications, that sort of thing. But we're working with our stakeholder groups very actively, and that's one thing that makes us very unique. Turf extension specialist obviously is an expert. Someone helps clients solve problems. We may not know the answers to everything, but we typically know who does know the answers, and that's part of our role as experts. We serve as a guide to help link the clientele up with the knowledge that we have, and that goes back to the mission of extension. We can also serve as mentors for clientele. So you have new clientele starting in the industry, or you're maybe encouraging the change of a practice, and so we can kind of serve as mentors in trying to and influencers on our next point there to try to influence the behavior of our clientele, whether it be trying to encourage them and mentor them in the area of, you know, blowing the fertilizer off the sidewalk after an application or the adoption of new practices that reduce inputs to the environment, those kind of things. Hopefully a good extension specialist is an effective communicator, or at least trying to work on the improvement of their communications. And typically, extension specialists have quite a bit of role as a planner, planning various meetings, conferences, workshops, and so on. So they typically have a good bit of experience doing that. And then lastly, someone that's adaptable. We have to, things get thrown on our desk. We have to be able to make shifts in our programs. And so hopefully we're making those modifications as we go and not repeating the same things over and over again. All right, so as far as like history of kind of, you know, who was, you know, I wanted to try to figure out, well, who was the first turfgrass extension specialist? And so it's kind of neat going through and reading, you know, some of the old USGA green sections, trying to figure out some of that information. And so I got three different groups I want to talk about, groups or individuals I want to talk about here. The first is the USDA and USGA. And early on, you know, it was the USDA agronomists, as well as later the USGA agronomists, were really the first that were doing extension-like activities. Now, these groups may not have been doing this through the land-grant institutions, but they were doing extension-like things, such as hosting, you know, workshops, hosting field day-like activities, and so on. So I'm going to give credit to Piper, Monteith, and Oakley as kind of some of the first that kind of laid the groundwork for what kind of turfgrass extension might look like. The next person I want to talk about is Lawrence Dickinson, Professor Lawrence Dickinson. Now, he was one of the first turf professors in the country. He was employed at what we know now as UMass, formerly Massachusetts Agriculture College. And he had a teaching, research, and extension appointment. He did not have the title as turfgrass extension specialist, but he did a lot of extension things. He taught golf course superintendents in a short course that later developed into the turf program at UMass. He also authored a book on turf culture and an extension leaflet on lawn management. And so even though he didn't have the role as extension specialist, he did things that we as extension specialists do today. Officially, we could say that the Fred Grau would be the first turfgrass extension specialist, hired by Penn State University in 1935. He developed extension materials, visited sites along with Dr. Musser, organized the first turf field day in 1937. That's the first one organized, at least by a land-grant institution, and then later went on to serve as the director of the green section after serving in World War II, and obviously we honor his contribution to our industry with one of our high C5 awards. So that's the best I could come up with, is probably the first turfgrass extension specialist and kind of the history of how that was developed. And once Dr. Grau started, had an effective program, then many institutions, kind of especially those in the Northeast, created turfgrass extension specialist positions at their universities. We know that extension has changed over time. If we look back at the last monograph, Roberts was quoted as saying, with many improved and elite turf grasses, specialized turf equipment, and an array of proven chemicals for many purposes, the extension specialist responsibilities are greatly different than what they are now than what they are in the past or what they were in the past. So we know that one of the difficulties as a turfgrass extension specialist is just staying up with all the information. And there's so many new products on the market, so many new cultivars. I think there's someone out there trying to sell like a Boilermaker turf cultivar or a Purdue turf cultivar. I get all these phone calls about, you know, these varieties we're releasing at Purdue. And I say, well, we're not releasing any varieties of Purdue, but someone's out there marketing it. So we're always kind of, you know, all these people asking us about these new products, and we're trying to, you know, figure out how to provide them some guidance on those kind of things. So one of the ways we wanted to try to capture some information in this chapter was to do a survey. We passed out a survey and emailed out a survey to C5 membership, so approximately 300 people. We documented that 41 of our 50 states currently have a C5 member, and 31 of those 41 states returned some survey information, and we identified as having turfgrass extension specialists. So the 31 states, let me back up there, I misquoted there. So the 31 states that responded to our survey, 26 of them had what we would say is a dedicated turfgrass extension specialist, where that was their primary role. And then universities had other faculty that had turfgrass extension duties, with primarily those being as an entomologist or a pathologist, weed scientist with turfgrass extension responsibilities, and then certain institutions, nematologist or soil scientist, or even sometimes a more of an urban person associated with turfgrass extension duty. So most of the time it's turfgrass extension, head turfgrass extension specialist with an entomologist and pathologist, but we do have others that, other scientists that play a role and are contributors to the extension programs at the various universities. We collected some data on what are the appointments of these extension specialists, and those that we identified as the turfgrass extension specialists. So of those 26 people, the average extension appointment was 74%, with that range going from 10 to 100%. The average time that the current specialist was employed at the university was about 11 years, so most of these folks were pretty experienced as turfgrass extension specialists. Most extension specialists had a two-way split between extension and research, with that typically being about a 75-25 split was kind of the median for that group. But we do have those that had three-way appointments, and those with three-way appointments typically had, on average, a 41% extension appointment. And the range on that was 10 to 70% extension based on those that had a three-way split. So when we talk about what does an extension specialist do, one of the big things that they do is they plan programs, and they plan those to three audiences, to turf professionals, to the general turfgrass industry, to county extension agents, and to the homeowners. So we broke our chapters out, our chapter out into those kind of headings, those kind of main category areas. And so we're not going to have time to go into all those in depth, but I'll kind of give you a list of how we broke each of those chapters out. And the first one I want to talk about is our programs to professionals. There's a list of all the different programs we talked about: field days, conferences, seminars, various BMP programs. We talked about the different types of approach, such as a trainer-trainer approach, pesticide licensing programs, using web conferencing, site visits, correspondence courses, international programs, and so on. Those are kind of some of the main categories we talked about. And I'm not going to be able to talk about all these in detail, so I want to just talk about one of those, and that's Turfgrass Field Day, and it'll kind of give you an idea of how we've organized each of these sections. So with the Field Day, we wanted to provide some historical data on each of these sections. So we talked about the first Field Days that were out there. And I mentioned this earlier, the first National Greenskeeper Convention was held in Washington, D.C., at the Arlington Turf Gardens, the current site of the Pentagon. And that was held in 1927, organized by the USDA and USGA scientists. And then I mentioned earlier about Dr. Grouse starting the first turfgrass field day from a land-grants institution in 1937. And these original field days, again, were meant to just demonstrate equipment was one of their main functions, and also any new technology. And we kind of do some of the same thing now, although we don't really talk much about equipment. We talk more about the technology, whether it be a plant product, fertilizer, plant protectant, or a fertilizer, or some other technology that we cover at our various field days. Okay, so I'm getting ahead of myself here a little bit. So another one of the first field days I mentioned, that was Dr. Grau was the first turfgrass extension specialist to organize a field day, and that was in 37, but I think that. Yes, that's correct, 1937. Sprague also organized one of the first field days in 1932 at Rutgers in New Brunswick. One of the field days are probably our biggest outreach event, our biggest education event that really demonstrate what the original Smith-Lever Act, what its intention was, where we're out there demonstrating things that are going on. It offers us, a chance to showcase our research at our various universities as well. A little bit of some of the facts on field days. 64% of those universities that have extension programs offer a field day on an annual basis. 24% offer those on an every other year or every third year basis. And then 7% of those that offer a field day offer those on a more than one field day a year. And typically when they offer more than one field day a year, they have a targeted audience, maybe a sod producers and a golf course superintendent or something, a different targeted audience for those field days. 77% of all turfgrass field days are located on campus, and then those that aren't located on campus are typically, production fields or golf courses at other areas. And then field day attendance ranges across the country from, I had reports of as little as 11 to as many as 1,100. with a median attendance of about 200 or so. The format for field day is a typical morning research tour, followed by a lunch program, and then some afternoon sessions. The major advantage that faculty identified of having a field day is it's the best chance for them to deliver content in a hands-on fashion to a large audience in a very short amount of time. The disadvantage is all the amount of time required to plan an event that lasts such a short amount of time. So that's the pro and the con are similar there, that the timing or the amount of time the event lasts is both pro and a con. And so that's one of the disadvantages of the field days, especially since we don't know what the weather's going to turn out to be. You put a lot of effort into these things, not really knowing how they might turn out. Most programs use these, as an extension tool or an outreach tool. Some will use them to cover costs, but from my personal experience, that most of the time a field day, it's pretty hard to make money off a field day. Most of the time you're just hoping to break even. But some identified that was a mechanism for them to generate funds for their programs. So that's essentially, how we broke out most of these professional chapters. So if we talked about a conference, we kind of talked about the history of turf conferences and then, how those were done at the various institutions, some facts and figures. One of our goals for this chapter was to try to take all this information that had never been recorded before and try to document it and get it in writing somewhere, and hopefully someone in the future can come and update, maybe do a better job than what we did, but to just get it out there somewhere, because we had such a hard time trying to track down some of this information. Now, when it comes to county agent training, we talked about professionals, county agent training, and homeowner training. This kind of comes back to a little bit of a philosophy issue, but the goal of your turfgrass extension specialist, you have two main target audiences, those as a turfgrass professional and those of the county extension agent. You have a third audience of the homeowner, but the way the extension system is developed is that at the county level, those various county extension agents would hopefully help serve the homeowner. Now, as extension specialists, we know that isn't always true. We get lots of requests for information from homeowners, and we just can't meet all those needs from the homeowners, especially because there's so many of them. When at all possible, we try to divert those questions to the county extension offices. And so what we're trying to do typically with some of our training to the county agents is to better equip them to serve the homeowner and hopefully cut the cord between homeowners and turfgrass extension specialists. To a certain extent, it doesn't mean that as extension specialists we don't serve homeowners. But at least personally, I'd rather serve them indirectly through writing publications and equipping the county agents, just because I know I personally don't have enough time to help them more direct fashion. Now, there are some good programs that highlighted in our chapter that talk about how you can, as an extension specialist, directly help the homeowner. One of those programs is out of Nebraska called the Backyard Farmer, where they actually have a TV show that obviously gets broadcast to a large number of citizens in that state, and that's a way for them to provide some homeowner education without having to be on the phone with them or be emailing them, but to convey a large amount of information to a homeowner audience. So there are definitely ways that you can help to equip a large number of homeowners, but that is a difficult task for I know for me and for many extension specialists. So most of the time when we educate our county extension agents, we're doing so through extension publications, writing extension publications they use, also offering in-service training. Those are specialized training opportunities where typically they would come to campus. You would offer some kind of a training, maybe both out in the field as well as in the classroom. And then we use, of course, our websites and other methods to educate the county extension agents. But typically, of these methods, kind of the in-service trainings are typically those that are most favored by the agents and typically, accepted by the extension specialists as well. And most of those are going to be initiated in cooperation between the agents, between the faculty member, and between administration. And hopefully, in many cases, administration provides some small funds to help these extension agents travel to campus so they can get some training. And that's probably one of our most effective ways to reach the agents. Now, as far as homeowner education goes, we broke our chapter out into these segments, into a master gardener segment, because that is such a large part of what we do. As far as our homeowner education, we broke it out into some lawn assistance programs, and we highlighted some of those. The one backyard farmer I mentioned already, but a program in Florida called Florida Friendly Landscaping. We talked about some various radio programs that exist across the country. And then a program I really like that Tony developed at Colorado State called Lawn Check is a really interesting way to try to give some diagnostic training to county extension agents and allow them a mechanism to actually generate funds on the county level to help support some of their programming. So you have to contact Tony about that or read about that when the chapter comes out. We talked about the various technology resources, social media, podcasts, internet, smartphone apps, and all those applications, which can obviously benefit the homeowner or benefit the professional, but we couldn't put them in both sections, so we stuck them in the homeowner section. And then we talked a little bit about the training that you would do at the home and garden center level to try to provide some additional information to the homeowners. We did address some opportunities and challenges in turf grass extension. We talked about the challenge of communicating with clients effectively. We talked about e-extension and that mechanism for distributing information. We talked about quantifying the impact of our various web-based programs and how we might be able to use that as extension specialists and our, part of our promotion packets and other things. We talked about the challenge of educating those that don't speak English, mainly some of our Hispanic training, and the most of that's been done in Florida. And Lori can provide, the chapter provides more information, and Lori can tell you a little bit about that, what they've done there in Florida. We talked about, the communicating with stakeholders about what we do and about the direction that they see the industry going and just kind of getting that, is how important it is to get that feedback from stakeholders. Sometimes it's easy, they volunteer information. Other times it's very tough to know whether or not your program is moving in the right direction. And so we talked about that. We talked about future programs, what extension might look like in the future, how's that going to be different, and I'll talk a little bit about that. And with that, the state of extension. Now, we talked about the state of extension. We talked a little bit about some of the concerns among extension specialists, how, decreasing revenue combined with, some other challenges have really made their jobs much more difficult. Sometimes the extension specialists feel it's hard to provide the quality of program that they would like to be doing with the limited resources that they have. So we talked about that, talked about some of the changes that are going on in extension. Some of those changes include a move from more of a county extension agent to more of a regional agent or a regional expert. All the cuts that are going on in extension. Just ask folks like at the University of Illinois and other programs about the cuts that they've had to their extension programs. And we talked about, whether or not extension might move to more of a fee-based program in the future in order to help generate funds and help sustain itself. We talked about how the role of the individual turf grass specialist has changed because of some of these challenges. Typically that comes with less travel, less site visits to see our clientele. Even though we have fewer resources, our administration expects the same amount of output that we've done in the past. And typically, a lot of our programs are going to be much more research-driven as far as the funding of those programs than what they had been previously and in the past. We talked about, because of that need for funding, sometimes our programs shift from more with the primary focus being on education to sometimes we're creating only the programs that will help generate revenue for our programs, and sometimes maybe we have some good ideas for other programs and how to do them, but because it would be difficult for us to generate revenue or at least cover our costs, sometimes we're reluctant to do some of those new programs. And some expressed, some of the folks that responded to our survey expressed concerns about the missions of statements of the universities and how they typically don't focus on extension. They've elevated research so high that extension is just thought of as unfavorably. And I can speak at our university, sometimes most faculty that are very unfamiliar with extension, especially those at maybe the area committee level as far as promotion packets go, they're just ignorant about what extension is and how it works, and when they're looking at a packet and deciding whether or not a a faculty member might be promoted, they just really have a tough time evaluating what we do because they're very unfamiliar with it. Some of the other comments relating to that last point is our ability to communicate to stakeholders, students, other faculty about the importance of extension. And most folks that were not raised on a farm or in some kind of agriculture community have no idea about what extension is. And we know we get a lot of our students more from urban areas than what we did in the past. And all the times where I've went into more of an introductory level class and given a guest lecture, and I asked students, you know, raise your hand if you know what extension is, and hardly maybe one or two people in a room of 50, 60, 70 raised their hand. Our students, the public in general, just are not familiar with what extension is and the services it provides. And we're all probably culpable for that a little bit, but extension has done a really poor job about educating the public about what they do and the kind of services they provide. When you tell someone about the services that extension provides, they're just amazed that that kind of a free resource is out there for them to take advantage of. They've never heard of it before and so on. And so we've done a bad job over our years. And I think sometimes our county extension agents feel overworked, and so sometimes they're not wanting to go out there and beat the doors and tell everybody about all the things they have going on because they don't feel like, because of the funding cuts, they'd be able to service the whole community should they all have an increased demand. All right, so some concluding comments. In summary, 76 years after the first turfgrass extension specialist was hired, turfgrass extension specialists are now present in most states and remain very active in helping and empowering a broad group of clientele by helping them solve the problems that they have and meeting their needs through research and education. Extension specialists create definitely relevant and high-quality programs over the years to meet clientele needs. And turfgrass extension specialists will need to continue to adapt as we move forward as they have in the past. Turfgrass extension specialists' ability to communicate with clientele and serve ever-changing needs and justify their significance, as I mentioned, is going to be and continue to be more and more important as we move in the future. The nice thing about turfgrass is that with the ever-increasing influence or popularity or however you want to phrase it, importance of urban agriculture, us as turfgrass extension specialists are very uniquely positioned to take advantage of that market and play a huge role in the education of clientele. And so I think, we're somewhat optimistic in some of our closing sentence I have down here at the bottom of our chapter is that this ever-increasing demand should afford turfgrass extension specialists the opportunity to serve clientele well into the future. We know that there are cuts in extensions, and these programs will continue, hopefully not, but probably continue to have some cuts. But like I said, we're uniquely positioned, and I think we do an excellent job. And if we can improve on some of the things we do and continue to you do a better job of bragging about some of the efforts that we do, that sometimes we do a very poor job as scientists, then I think we can position ourselves well into the future. So I'll finish with the same slide that Jamie started with. He emailed me about 3 months ago and asked me for a photo, and I didn't know what he needed it for, but now I do. And take any questions you might have.
Any questions for Aaron?
Hearing none, I'll assume I did an exceptional job, and thank you very much.